Welcome to the Envision Rise podcast show, a podcast that helps foster respect through inclusion, service, and equity. Now here's your host, Stacy Hegarty.
Welcome to the Envision Rise podcast. I'm your host, Stacy Hegarty, Vice President of Equity and Inclusion for Envision Rise. Our guest today is Martine Kalau. I hope I said that correctly. I've been working on it.
Yes, you did.
And she is the founder of Martine Kalau Enterprises. She's also the author of ABCs of Diversity, A Manager's Guide to Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in the New Workplace. Hi, Martine.
Hi, Stacy. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. I got to read your book, and there's a lot of really cool stuff that I want you to talk about. But first, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners so they can get to know a little bit about you?
Yeah. Hi, listeners. I'm Martine Kalau, as Stacy said, founder and CEO of Martine Kalau Enterprises. What we do at Martine Kalau Enterprises is we offer consulting to human resources professionals and hiring managers or managers so that they can access DEI, make DEI more accessible to them so that it doesn't feel like a burden to them. It's not time consuming, and they know how to position DEI to get a seat at the table.
All right, let's get right into the book because I cannot wait to hear.
All right, let's do it.
We talk about this so much because what we hear, you and I kind of work in the same space, and I know you're hearing the same things I am. I don't know what to say. As a manager, I don't know what to do when I see a microaggression happen in my presence. I don't know how to not embarrass somebody, but to also defend the person who is the center of the microaggression. So why don't you first tell me what caused you to write this book?
Yeah, well, there are a number of things, but I think my background is not only in DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion training, but also in learning and development. So I've built many management development programs in my past life, right? And so it occurred to me that when I saw and heard DEI positioned through the media or whatever, it was through an academic lens, which is all in, great and wonderful, but in the workspace, right, we're not academics. And so what I found when I was working with different clients, and it was almost verbatim and consistent from one client to another, I would have the CEO or someone in the C-suite, usually it would be a white male, who'd say, you know what, I don't feel like I can say anything. I'm going to stay out of it because I don't want to say the wrong thing. And I thought, that's exactly what we don't want. We want everyone in this conversation. And if that's the result and the outcome of DEI, then it's actually not. It's not doing what it's intended to do, which is to include everyone, bring everyone into a dialogue. And the reason people are apprehensive is because we get so caught up in the language, in the vocabulary of what a microaggression is, and am I using the right terminology? So people refrain from saying the wrong thing. We don't want to be shamed. We don't want to be blamed, right? We don't want to feel bad. And so people sort of stay on the margins of this conversation or don't even want to engage. And so for me, I wanted to make it accessible and to remind people that the very framework of being a manager, of being a human resources professional, of being a human being is around relationship building. And that is the framework. That's the core of diversity, equity, inclusion. So I thought, you know, let me just remind people that they have a lot of the fundamental tools. And so let's start from there. And that's what this book is about. It's meant to be a primer for managers, but also for anyone who just doesn't know where to insert themselves in this really complicated ecosystem of DEI.
You and I are so very much aligned in all of this language because it's so easy to fall into that academic mindset of here's what the data says, here's what the research says, here's what this famous sociologist has to say about being Black in America or whatever the topic is. And some of that's important, but you don't change people's minds and hearts drowning them in data. So that's, I love that your book really makes all of this accessible. Let's talk first about the title. I want to talk about the title just a little bit because you use the phrase, the new workplace.
Yes.
Oh, there's so much new in the workplace since 2020.
So many changes.
Talk about it.
Look, the most important thing to know is that when I work with organizations, I just remind them, like, you know, we want to be ahead of the curve. Like, according to U.S. labor statistics, by 2032, so like within the next 9 years, the majority of the workplace will be POC, people of color, and it will also be millennials and Gen Zers. And so, you know, what we know about millennials and Gen Zers is that this conversation around DEI is forefront in their minds, right? When they're working in these workspaces. And so they're going to be the drivers of our organization. So why not get ahead of the curve before falling behind the curve, right? And so that's really what I wanted to frame it around. And there's so many other statistics out there, but that's the one to keep in mind. I mean, certainly we can also think about the work, the new workplace, and how, you know, it's much more global, right? And where organizations are outsourcing to all parts of the world, right? Our customer service teams are sometimes in India, in the Philippines, and wherever, Cape Town, South Africa. I mean, this is inevitable. It's already here. DEI is already here. It's been here for ages, right? We're just labeling it now. And now we are at a very critical impasse where we get to decide, hey, do we want to see the value of it, right? And actually be proactive, or do we want to be reactive, right? And so that's really what that new workplace really, you know, encapsulates.
We really do need people to start thinking about what's going to happen in the next 7 to 9 years. 2030
is happening.
It's here. And 2030 is the year where all the baby boomers will be at traditional retirement age, 65.
Yes.
There are not enough people in Gen X to slide into those roles. My generation, we're a very small generation, a small yet mighty and maybe a little bit bitter generation. But
I'm right in between the cusp of Gen X and millennial. Like, I'm literally right there, and I'm like, and I get it.
Kind of its own special group, the elder millennials, as you are called. But it's so important for organizations to get ahead of this now, because you're not going to make change. Transformational change does not happen in 2029 because you suddenly realize that, oh, hey, things are happening. It's got to start now. And if you haven't started yet, don't panic.
Yeah.
There are people like Martine and like myself who can get you there.
That's right. On that note, because I love the term transformational change. And what we want organizations to understand is that this is not about charity. This is not just about doing the right thing. This is really about smart business decisions. This is about growing your bottom line, your revenue also, right? And so that's what we're talking about. This is about how to tap into new markets if you're a B2C, business to consumer organization. How are you accessing those markets? Who's on your sales team? Who are your operating teams who are reaching out to customers? How are you engaging them? How are we retaining them? There are all of these different facets of running a business that are tied into DEI. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want organizations to see and to leverage. That's it.
I think that's such a good point. First and foremost, there's a business case.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes. We want you to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
If you can't get there in your mind about it, then get to the business case in your mind, because that's critical. 19%, right? 19% greater revenue in companies that are more diverse and inclusive, not just diverse. Got to be inclusive too.
That's right. Very important point. Yeah.
I want to talk about how you manage teams in a way that is with an eye towards diversity, equity, and inclusion. And one of the examples I'd like to talk about is, what do you do as a manager when you witness microaggressions or you witness something happen that is based in unconscious bias? Obviously, I hope all managers know what to do if they witness hate speech. So hopefully we don't have to talk about that. But let's talk about the things that are more insidious, the things that are more difficult for a lot of managers, especially new managers, to know how to address.
No, I love that. I love that you're asking this question. And I want to unpack what an unconscious bias is, what a microaggression is, because I think, again, when managers hear this language, they go, oh, this is so overwhelming. I don't know like what a microaggression is. Like, in its simplest form or terms, a microaggression is just, it's an experience where someone hears something or is a subject of an action that they feel is offensive, right? And it's based on underlying stereotypes. And a stereotype is essentially it's one narrative that we give to a person because of their association to a group, right? Like, so at the end of the day, if I'm a manager and I don't know what the heck a microaggression is or an unconscious bias, all I need to know is if I see something that doesn't seem right, right? Someone on my team seems offended, or they come to me and say, I'm really upset about XYZ, then that essentially should trigger something in my mind saying, I need to do something as a manager, right? I need to be an ally. So that's all that matters, right? So anyone who's listening to this and they go, I won't know when it's a microaggression, when it's not, when it's an unconscious bias, don't worry about those things. Those are we can put the vocabulary and the language to it later. But ultimately, what I ask managers and when I'm leading these workshops, I go, what do you do any other circumstance when someone comes to you and they're upset about something, when someone on your team is upset, right? What do you do when you see something that isn't right? What do you do, right? And so the very first thing, I mean, we know coaching, that's like the foundation of being a manager, right? So the most important thing is to listen and to coach, right? And what that can look like, be a myriad of things, but the goal is to understand where that person's coming from. So creating that safe space where there's a level of trust, where we're not, you know, I know this word is sometimes overused, but gaslighting, right? Where we're saying, oh yeah, I'm sure that, you know, we're overreacting, or I'm sure they didn't mean it that way. If someone comes to you and they're upset about something and they have an experience, or they feel like, you know, something you said didn't sit with them the right way, the best thing that we can first do is make sure that it's still a good time to get clarity and ask questions, right? Then we open up the dialogue and we listen to them. So what's the concern? What's the problem? What is the issue, right? And our job is not to decide whether the person is justified in being upset. That is not our role, right? Our role is to validate what they're experiencing. And validation doesn't mean we agree with them. It just means I hear where you are, I hear and I see that you're upset. And then the next part of it is that coaching part of it, which, you know, in any management development training, that's what we learn. Coaching is engaging in a two-way dialogue where we are both coming up with the solutions, right? So it's not about the manager, especially if there's someone's experiencing some sort of bias or, you know, what have you, is coming up with a solution for them. And it's also not asking them to figure it out on their own, because we want to be active allies. So sometimes the solution is asking more questions. What, you know, how can we, you know, I'm acknowledging the situation and then asking the person, you know, what can we do? How can we move forward from this? How can I help you move forward in this situation, right? So people want to hear validation. And then sometimes it's just the validation that they want. Thank you. And I appreciate you acknowledging me and validating my concerns. That's all. I'm okay. I can handle it myself. Or it becomes a dialogue and a conversation of how we can both collectively work together to support me in the future. And so that's where it starts.
What you're describing is restorative justice.
Yeah.
That's really the conversation that you're coaching people with. And I want to back
psychological
up.
Safety, right?
Exactly. The safety and really restoring a sense of power to the person who has been harmed.
That's right.
They get to have a say. Obviously, there are going to be some situations where it's too big. You can't just let it go.
Yeah.
But there are situations where if the person says, I got it, you get to believe them and you get to say, okay.
That's right. And when you just said that, it sparked something, because I do recall there was an instance with a client of mine. I was leading this workshop on management development around inclusive management. Mm-hmm. And someone, you know, was candid and said, Martine, I really am nervous about this whole DEI thing because I don't want to bring someone in and, you know, to be spotlighted and accused of being racist, right? Like, I don't want to do the wrong thing because I feel like I will be on, you know, scrutinized for everything I do. And then that person's going to blame me for something. And then I will be accused of being racist. And I just don't want to deal with that. And my response to that was, you know, first of all, I appreciate your candor because we have to start having these conversations. And while DEI is preventative, right? So what we engage in DEI so that we can prevent from situations escalating, right? So that they become EEO situations and complaints. That's one.
Be safe.
Right. We want to create a safe space, but there's also, you know, the value of doing this DEI work is to create a space, an environment where people can thrive, including the manager. Mm-hmm. So the first thing we want to do, right, I wanted that person to understand is to unpack why their immediate thought is that they're going to be shamed or blamed, right? And what we can do as managers, like you said, to establish those types of relationships and trust where a person can feel comfortable sharing with us the concerns that they have and not us not feeling like we're immediately to blame for it. So I wanted to just put that out there and make sure that, you know, the audience knows that we acknowledge all the different fears and concerns that come with this conversation.
These conversations can be really difficult. I think probably 9 times out of 10, that's what I hear from folks, that I'm just really uncomfortable with this. And I'm so afraid that my intention to say the right thing is not going to shine through. And I'm going to put my foot in my mouth and I'm going to say something that I honestly don't mean, but it's going to come out able.
We're all going to put our foot in our mouth at some point. And that's what, and so part of this is creating that space where we give each other grace,
yes, right?
And creating a space where we're all on this learning continuum. I'm on a learning continuum, right? I don't know everything and how to be politically correct about every, you know, category within the diversity bucket, right? I'm going to say something that's wrong. But what I hope is that the person or the people that are on my team will give me grace. And that if we start this, we establish a level of trust and inclusion in the beginning, we're all in this continuum to learn. And the other thing that I always say is that if we can get rid of this good, bad dichotomy that exists within the space of DEI, I feel like it's like one of the only spaces where it's like, you say something, you're either a good person or a bad person. I'm either, it's an attack on your character or it's elevating your character. Let's just assume that in the workspace, for the most part, people are well-intentioned, right? There are some pretty nasty people out there, but for the most part, people are well-intentioned. And so if we can remember that going into these conversations and these spaces, we can give each other more grace.
I think that piece is so very important. And for folks that are worried about basic language acquisition, I would say, for DE&I, because they feel like it's a moving target, that, you know, what I learned growing up on the playground is no longer, and it's, you know, we all thought it was fine. Well, it wasn't fine then, and it's really super not fine now. But there's definitely more nuance than that. And, you know, learning about where words come from, for instance, the word moron is ableist and has, you know, roots in psychiatry that are...
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. See how we learn new things?
Right. But the thing is, what I always keep in mind, because it is a little bit nerve-wracking, like you said, I did not know that moron was...
How many times would we have said that?
Right. So it's grace, but it's also acknowledging the environments and the spaces you're in, right? So you're not going to know how I prefer to be identified, right? Like, should you refer to me as a Black woman, as African-American? Like, you're not going to know. You could rack your brain trying to figure out what's the appropriate way. So the best thing to do is ask sometimes, right? And then if you say something that doesn't align with what I think or feel, I don't have to assume that you're a bad person and you're ill-intended. What I can do is create a space where I can say, hey, you know, actually, you know, Stacey, I identify as Black, mm-hmm, as a Black woman, not necessarily African-American or whatever. You know,
so let's role play a quick one. I've got this one always. So, and it's pretty typically this dynamic, a white person and a Black person. And it's me, white person, saying, so, Martine, where are you from?
That's such a good one. All right. So I'll share the role play. So Stacey, before, you know, I answer that question, I'm just curious what sparked your question, why you asked that question.
I thought I heard a little bit of a Northeastern accent and I grew up in the Northeast.
Excellent. Well, long story short, I'm from a lot of places, but you're right. I lived in the Northeast, but before then I was actually born in Zambia in Africa, moved to the US when I was 4. And then I lived throughout Maryland, New York City, New York State, etc. So that's where you're picking up that Northeast accent. Yeah. That's a perfect one. You know why? Because that is one where I hear many individuals, particularly people of color, who will tell me that they get offended. And I used to get offended by that, right? Because I felt like, well, why are they asking where I'm from? And I would get that across the board. It didn't matter who, what the person looked like, whether what their gender, their color, their race, people would always ask me. At first I was offended. Like, why are they asking? Do they think that because I'm Black, I'm not from America? Like, what was it? And when I started to ask people to clarify, they'd give me all these different responses. Well, because the way that you speak and your intonation is just, it's not typical of individuals in this area, or your demeanor, you know, has just, it's just different from like the typical New York City demeanor or whatever. And so then I thought, oh, that's totally okay. I get that. That makes sense. As opposed to assuming something, making an assumption that someone's trying to offend me, right? So it's important. And it's important for these types of conversations to happen. They can happen just like that. And a harder one could be if you'd said, Martine, you're so articulate, right? Because yes, there are some nuances to that where there's stereotypes that are rooted in someone complimenting a Black person and saying they're articulate, right? So immediately, if you were to say that to me, I would, instead of assuming and getting offended, which I would have done years ago, I would say, well, you know, Stacey, what do you mean by that? And you might say, this is a friend of mine said, well, Martine, you're so animated when you speak and you use your hands. And again, your tone, you're like, you're not monotone and you use vocabulary that's not overly complex, but easy to follow. Anyone can follow it. And I go, actually, you're right.
I am very articulate.
So that makes sense. And sometimes we use language that we hear, right? But we don't really mean what we say when we're telling someone something, when we're complimenting someone, right? So maybe that person can be more clear in the future, right? When they're speaking, when they're complimenting someone, and instead of saying you're so articulate, or they could say you're articulate and what I mean is, or what have you. So this is just another example.
I think what you're describing to me is that feeling of
patience.
But yes, and when you feel as though you belong in the environment that you're in, when you feel included, it's less likely that you are going to jump to offense when someone asks you what could potentially be not only a harmless question, but a question that creates a deeper relationship.
Yeah. Because you're assuming, you're not on the defensive, right? Yes. And that's really, I think, I really believe that's what we get to do and foster with DEI in organizations. It's just reduce our level of defensiveness as we're engaging in conversation, because guess what? We all come from different walks of life, different experiences. We're bound to say something that's probably not going to sit well with the other person, or they may not be in agreement with. So let's just lower our level of defense and assume that person is learning, we're all willing to teach and learn together, and that no one's a bad person in this conversation. That's really what we have an opportunity to do in the workspace. And I think the workspace is such a great microcosm for the world.
And right? We spend so much of our time there.
Yeah.
We spend most of our waking hours.
Yeah.
So we should have not only the benefit of working at a place where we feel completely included, completely accepted, but that should be the minimum, is should be inclusion and belonging.
Yeah.
Well, Martine, we're almost at the end of our time together.
We are?
I know, it flies right by. There's so
many. I feel like it just started.
We need to have you back. This seems to be the year where I'm having all of these wonderful guests. This season 3 has been fantastic, because I think most of our guests have been like, okay, we need a second one with you. But before we say goodbye on this episode, what advice do you have for perhaps a manager who, you know, just some quick little advice? Obviously, read your book. But what would you tell someone who's feeling a little unsure and uncertain about how to navigate these waters?
Yeah, I would say that you have a lot of the tools, the fundamental tools that you need to engage in DEI, because DEI is really about, it's about communication. It's about relationship building. It's about asking questions listening, being open-minded, asking permission to ask questions. So that's the most important thing. If there's any takeaway from all of this, it's if you're nervous and unsure as to how to engage in a conversation with someone, and there's a lot of level of curiosity about who the person is and what their experiences are so that you can build a deeper connection with them, right, within the framework of DEI, ask permission to ask questions. Is this a good time? You know, I want to learn more about your background, a little bit more about, you know, and share and exchange and learn. And I'm on my own DEI journey, but I want to know if this is a good time to ask a question. And that's it.
I love the ask permission part because it gives people a chance to have some control over the response in that moment. And it could be that the response is, you know what?
I'm not right now.
Give me 10 minutes. Let me go take a walk. Let me go grab a coffee, whatever I need to do.
Right.
And because those conversations, when people are too upset and too in that moment of pain,
right,
they don't go as well as they could. And you don't get to resolution, which is what everybody wants, right?
Right.
Well,
and it's okay to take a pause. Like you said, it's okay to stop, come back later, and continue the dialogue as well.
It really is. I think it's more productive that way oftentimes if you can let people gather themselves.
Yeah.
So where can people find more about you? Where can they find your book?
Question. You can go to my website, martinekalau.com, and that's where you can find information about my book. And I have a monthly masterclass. It's complimentary. It's free. It's 90 minutes. And what we go over are the top five things that you can do to implement DEI in your workspace within the next 90 days. So please join in that masterclass by going to my website at martinekalau.com.
I love it. A masterclass. It's perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And for our listeners, you probably already know this, but if you don't and you'd like more information about Envision Rise, you can find us at envisionrise.com. Martine Kalau, thank you so much for sharing your time and talents with us today.
Thank you, Stacey.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Remember, diversity and inclusion should not be treated as a one-off initiative. And so with your help, we can get this message to more people. Subscribe, rate, and review the show, and be a part of making a difference, because it starts with you.